Well, it's another lesson on our timeless Creator. And obviously, we'll never be able to exhaust the supply of information. But let me ask you a question. Why'd God save you? You think about that for a minute, and the first thought usually it comes to somebody's mind is, well, God saved me to keep me out of hell, keep me from going and burning forever. That's not why He did it. Because He's sure letting a lot of them go. So why did He save you? He said, well, He saved me for His glory. That's true. He saved me for His pleasure. That's true. Well, then, how is that working in your life? How is He benefiting then? Or is this just a matter of waiting until it's all over on this earth, and then He finally starts getting what He paid for? No, it's supposed to be now. Are and were created. Present existence should be for His pleasure continually. And so that's what some of these lessons here are a little bit more about. They're more about His pleasure. And when it comes right down to it, it's a matter of almost examining yourself. The things that I'm teaching right now are not about, oh, God's glory, His greatness, His power, His timelessness, the different things that He's made and how He made them. Right now, it's more about how is He going to derive pleasure from us, the reason that He created us and the reason that He saved us. What's the difference between us and other people? What's the difference between a Christian here at Walnut, a Christian at Olive, and a Christian at Marcus Point, you know, or a Christian that don't bother going to church ever? What about Christians in the rest of the world that don't even have a church to go to? And when you get right down to it, if you think being saved is a matter of going to church, what do you do with the poor people that don't even have one? You think, well, I've done that what I'm supposed to do. I went to church and I sang my song and I put my money in the offering plate. Well, them other people must be a big zero then. See, we get to thinking about everything around us and we compare ourselves with ourselves. We don't compare ourselves with something that's unfamiliar to us. We don't try to compare ourselves to God. We don't think outside of the box. And in this case, the box has skin on it. We're kind of stuck inside of this thing. And all of our attention and our thoughts are toward ourselves. Last week, we talked about a little bit of the differences between an observer and a participator. And the basic difference is that an observer is a user. An observer is watching a football game for their own pleasure. They're not adding anything to the game. They don't help anybody out there. You say, well, if you go to the game and you cheer on your team, you know, that's enthusiasm. Yeah, there might be a tiny bit, but I guarantee you in that stand full of people, you ain't going to be noticed whether you're there or not. I mean, take your shirt off and paint your face, you know, something like that maybe. Most of those guys do that kind of stuff to draw attention to themselves. They just get further into it. The only explanation to sports that made any sense to me was one thing that a man can do and get totally involved in with no risk. I said, well, maybe that's it. But I've never felt that way about it. They just don't really do that much for me watching. Anyway, participators, those are the people that desire to be used. They want to be part of the action. They want something to happen. They want to be a contributing force here, something that has some value, you know, some benefit. Well, God made us for Himself. He didn't make us for ourselves. Let's start over here in 1 Corinthians 1. We'll look at some of these things. Now, do you want to be a user or do you want to be used? You say, oh, well, I want to be used. Well, is that you wanting to be used or do you want Him to use you if He wants to? I mean, there's a big difference between me, and somebody that just sits there quietly like Mary. I guarantee you Jesus Christ was getting more out of Mary's presence than He was out of Martha's efforts. So what is it for us? Sometimes we're just a tool laying in the drawer. It's not like God picks you up and uses you constantly. He doesn't have to have you in His hands for Him to use you and derive pleasure from your existence. How do you know that? Well, your kids can be playing and you enjoy watching them play, right? I mean, they can just be nice to somebody. They can be doing something that has no effect on you whatsoever and you can derive pleasure from that. So if he's given us all things richly to enjoy and it reflects back on him in a sense of appreciation and gratitude for the things he's given us, he can get pleasure out of it even though he's not picking you up and using you to go take a city for God, so to speak. Anyway, let's take a look at this thing here. 1 Corinthians 1:17-31. For Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with the wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ should be made none effect. What is wisdom of words? What do you think that is? Kind words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. That thing is not some way that you can articulate something to convince the unbelievers. He didn't send him there to figure out the best way to say it so, man, he'll get the converts. God's got a real magical way of portraying the gospel. It's just, it's absolutely amazing. You yell fire, people start looking for fire and looking for an exit. But you can say hell fire, and they're just lost as a goose in a horse race. They're not looking for an exit. They're not figuring danger, you know. It's like, that's just your opinion. You get in a real life situation, you say fire in a place, man, they start looking. Well, how come it doesn't work the other way? Because God's keeping this thing to himself. And he's doing it in such a way that all he's giving you is hints and clues and nothing else. God didn't come here to convince anybody of anything. He only came to find those that were lost. He's only interested in those that come to him. You know what come to him involves? Seeking. That's somebody that has a need. That's somebody that wants something. God says, those are the ones I'm going to give something to. The rest of them, they're not going to get it, man. I'm going to hide it from them. Watch this stuff. Not with wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ should be made of none effect. For the preaching of the cross to them that perish is foolishness, but unto us which are saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God, it pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. And that's exactly what a lost person thinks. He thinks that stuff, that ranting and raving man and them holy rollers and all the rest of that stuff, you guys are nuts. That's what they think. Well, what other conclusion can they come to? Well, the only other conclusion they can come to is, man, there is a fire. I got to do something about it. God says, I'm not interested in convincing you. He said, I'm looking for something else. For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, and unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But of them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God. What is that, the called? Oh, man, that must be predestination. No. All you have to understand is that he says, come unto me, all you that labor, right? And he that cometh to me, I will no wise cast out. Which one of the called? The ones that respond. That's it. That's why I said he's not willing that any should perish. What's the difference? Some respond and some don't respond. And the ones that respond, those are the ones he's talking about. And the minute you begin to respond to something God's showing you, he'll show you more. When you first got saved, all of a sudden, you became aware of the reality and the existence of heaven, of hell, of the Holy Spirit, of righteousness. It was like you passed from darkness into light. You began to see and understand things you never even had a clue of before, and you couldn't have figured it out on your own. Why couldn't you get it? Why all of a sudden was this, now I understand? Where'd that come from? That supernaturally imputed to you. God just gave it to you. It's like, you know, downloading this information into your mind and into your heart. And then he doesn't give you everything. He only gives you enough to get you started. Otherwise, it wouldn't be any matter of seeking him anymore. It'd be a matter of, okay, God, here I am. I'm done. I'll just wait around until you come and get me. It's not what he's interested in. It's a matter of hints and clues, and only the seekers are going to be shown. The others are going to mock and laugh and ridicule. Let's look at these other verses here, 25 on. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, brethren, how not many wise after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world, and the things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and those things which are not, to bring to naught the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. But of him are ye in Christ Jesus, who of God is made unto us wisdom and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, that according as it is written, he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord. You realize what you just read? What you just read was God's attitude toward mankind. He said, you think you're smart? You're not going to get it. How come, God? Because I'm not going to give my glory to somebody else. You know who's speaking? People with a need. People that want more than what they've got. People that look up in that sky and the heavens declare the glory of God and they say, this thing has got to be made by somebody that's really smart. I mean, it's like that doctor telling me, you know, he was a lost Catholic for years until he began to study internal medicine. And when he got down into the levels of internal medicine and how those medicines interact and how the body manufactures those things and all the factories and how those things interwork with each other, he goes, there's a creator and I got to find him. That guy was already a doctor when he figured that stuff out. We're supposed to figure this stuff out. As long as you're just going through life, you know, with nothing more than, well, God help me, I've got problems with my finances, you know, I hurt this morning, I need a good night's sleep, give me a raise, God, you know. I can't hardly pay for these bills now that I got cable TV and satellite and internet and bought a new car and, oh man, God, help, 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 I'm drowning. What did you jump overboard for, son? What do you think, I'm here just to jump in here and bail you out every time you get yourself in a mess? God's not bored. He's not looking for something to do. He's looking for somebody that will respond to him from his desires. That's why he made us. He didn't make us just to eat animals and eat vegetables and drop dead. Build buildings that'll decay. I mean, you go back and look at past history. What has man ever done that's lasted? Nothing, man. Nothing. I mean, you know, it's just nothing. I mean, when it gets right down to it, everything just comes to naught. It's just nothing. The only thing that matters is the purpose that it exists for.
Amen.
I mean, that's it. And it does have a purpose. And for somebody to start looking for answers, that's when God shows you. A guy that looks up there and says, man, look at that nebula. Isn't that great? Man, that's incredible. Look what we got with the Hubble telescope. Look what we found. Well, man, that's like finding $1,000 out there in the parking lot. You didn't make it. Look what I found. You talk like you made it or something, went out and earned it. Well, look at me. I did something. You haven't done anything when you found something. You've only done something when you've accomplished something. And God did give us a purpose. Anyway, when you look through these things, you begin to understand there's a difference. And the key is not weakness or lowliness, like in verse 26, or foolishness or powerlessness in verse 27, or baseness or being despised or nothingness in verse 28. That's not the key to this thing. It's true humility. That can only come by real faith. That's where humility comes from. It comes from pure faith. You say, well, how does that work? You know what faith is? Substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, right? Have you seen God? When you live in the reality that He exists moment by moment, watching you every day, that you're made for a purpose, that everything He's doing in your life, that it's He that worketh in you, both to will and to do of His good pleasure. And there's purpose not only in the good things He gives you, but in the suffering and things you go through. And it's to His purpose. It's for His pleasure. It pleased God to bruise him. Well, if He'll do that to His son, what do you think He'll do to you? Oh, man, that's scary. Hey, everything He doeth all things well. His ways are perfect. Problem is, we don't understand perfection. We think perfection is based on our schedule, you know? It's based on our curve. And as long as it's good for me and not too bad for the rest of them, I'm happy. That's what we get to thinking, you know. After me, you come first. That's the way we feel. How about after God, everybody else is a distant 150th? That's the way it really is. He's the one that's somebody. Anyway, it comes through faith. It comes by knowing who God is, what His purpose is, what His desires are, and what His glory is, and living in that reality. Now, that's what it comes down to. And when you get down to that level, all of a sudden, humility becomes automatic. Because you compare yourself then to the right standard. You compare yourself to the one who's by the breath of His mouth, He makes the stars. That's who you're comparing yourself to. And one day, we're going to see Him. Whether you lost or you're saved, you're going to see Him. You're going to see the one that this whole book's about, that all of creation is about and for. And when you see Him, you're going to know for a fact that's who He is, and it really was true. And when you get that reality, man, it's going to be a sense of an overwhelming reality that you won't be able to escape from. And in one, it's going to be the terror of the Lord, knowing therefore the terror of the Lord we persuade men. For you, on the other hand, in His presence fullness of joy, and in His right hand pleasures forevermore. That's what's going to happen. And I mean, that thing's going to be split so far apart, you couldn't get it any further apart if you tried. And that's God's plan for this whole thing. But you get to looking at that stuff, and you have to live in this sense of reality. And as long as your faith is small, you don't see God existing like I'm describing Him. You don't look at a flower and are just in awe of your Creator. You don't read the words like I just read through here and get moved from the inside by them and realize that God's a jealous God. You know what jealousy is? That's the feeling that you deserve something that belongs to you. God's a jealous God. Envy is something else. Envy is when you look at somebody else that's got something and you wish you had it instead of them. And for envy, they delivered Him. And who can stand before envy? But God's a jealous God. And if you start realizing who God is and that those are His feelings He exposed to you Himself, that's how He feels toward people that are proud. That's how He feels toward people that think they're somebody. And He says, I won't use you. I don't want anything to do with you. Well, who do you want to use, God? He said, I only want to use the people that won't take the credit. Why? Because I'm not going to give my glory to another. That's why. That's who God is. You wonder why more stuff's not being done in churches today? That is the reason right there. Man, the minute it gives them any kind of results whatsoever, they publish it abroad. Look what we got going on. Man, what a mess this thing is. You get to feeling like you're somebody and that you're doing something. That's not the way it works. You live in that reality. God does all kinds of things in that realm that you don't understand if you've never been there. You say, you talking about you? No. Don't misunderstand, you know. I'm like Paul, boy, I'm just a sinner talking to other sinners. When you get right down to that level, though, there's all kinds of things I've watched God do for other people. One of the things, He gives my wife those crazy front parking places. I mean, right up front, you know. The other day, she calls me up. She calls me up from Walmart. She said, you don't believe what God did. I said, what'd He do? He gave me a front row spot to park in the shade at Walmart. I said, in the shade? I said, man, God, you have just gone beyond yourself here. Well, I don't guess that's possible. You've outdone yourself, God. Well, I don't guess that's possible either. How come? Because God enjoys doing things for people that respond to Him like that, that are excited about it, that feel emotion toward God's generosity. The reason you don't get more from God is because He doesn't get anything back from you. He barely gets a thank you, and there's no emotion connected to it. It's just, now say thank you, son. Thank you. Or more like, thank you. What's God looking for? God's looking for a response from you. What kind of response? Intellectual? Man, according to what we just read, it's not. He doesn't care anything about how smart you are. He's not concerned about that stuff. He's got other motives and stuff. Anyway, what else? Well, God wrote this book to determine what's in your heart. How did he do that? It's an inside secret response. Look over at Hebrews 11, 5 to 6. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death and was not found because God had translated him. Before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. Now, the other day we were talking about Enoch, and I thought, you know, he'd probably up there in the flesh, you know, just went on up there in the flesh. But he's going to be about as close as you can get to that flesh, except he was translated. When you translate something, you change it. So he was changed. He was not just taken up there in the flesh and staying up there in the flesh. But anyway, verse 6, but without faith it's impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Now, question is, when you read that verse 6, what do you get out of that? I mean, you read that stuff and you say, oh man, I just need to have more faith. Man, Enoch had a lot of faith. You realize it's a whole lot easier to have the kind of faith Enoch had when God's walking right there beside you. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. There's God right there. Well, how could you have some faith? Because he had to believe everything God told him. And he had to believe it without ever seeing the rest of it. And he had to believe it in such a way that God knew there was no doubt whatsoever in his mind or heart. I mean, that's about like you praying as that mountain moved into the sea. You suppose there'd be any doubt there? I mean, when you get right down to it, that's what was missing in Enoch. No doubt. He had no doubt whatsoever. God said it, he'd believe it. God said, man, I like this guy. How come? He believes everything I say. Boy, he is really gullible. I says, I like this so much. He said, I think I'm just going to go ahead and prove it to you one day. Although you don't even need the proof, there's no point in going any further with this thing because you just believe everything. He said, hey, might as well get you out of here. Anyway, you read that. What do you get out of it? If you please God, he'll reward you. Is that what you see there? If you diligently seek him, he'll reward you. How about if you're both seeking and pleasing God, he'll reward you? What about Revelation 22:12? What's Revelation 22:12 say? I mean, that's right there at the end of the Bible. And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give every man according as his work shall be. What is that, like Santa Claus? Got a big sack over his back and then give out these rewards? What is that? When you get thinking about this stuff, it's like, well, there's something's got to be happening here more than what meets the eye. That verse right there would make most people think the more you do, the more you've earned. Let me ask you this. What's God owe you? What has he ever owed you? Do you think God will ever be indebted to you? You think he's ever going to put you in a position now to have to say, oh, I owe it to you, I guess I better do it. You think that's the way it's going to be? It doesn't work that way. How does humility fit in? What humility? James 4:6, 1 Peter 5:5. God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble. And then God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Those things are worded almost exactly the same way, with that conjunction only being changed from and to but or from but to and. And that's two different guys writing that stuff down. And then get it that close together. Anyway, go back to Hebrews 11:6 again. But without faith it's impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. What is that? Are God's rewards some kind of a payment schedule? What is that? God's rewards are really gifts. How do you know? Without me, you can do nothing. It's he that worketh in me, both to will and do of his good pleasure. You think Peter could stand up there and say, well, God, I had 5,000 saved in that one message. Nope, it's God that does the saving. It's he that adds them to the church. He's the one that brings conviction of sin, righteousness, and judgment to come. He's the one that adds reality to those words. Why does he do that? He rewards for his pleasure. That's what it's about. When you get right down to it, what if you felt like you earned something from God? When He gave it to you, how would your response be? Well, I had that coming. Well, I kind of expected a little bit bigger crown here. Man, he's got a few more jewels in his, but man, I worked harder than him. You realize one of the problems that employees have? They start comparing themselves to everybody else and they never feel like they're paid enough. Why? Because they did something. Don't you see how this stuff works? There's got to be more going on here than meets the eye. It's not about I do something and then God gives me something back. Why? Because it's for His pleasure. He didn't make you just to get rid of a pile of stuff up in the storehouse He's trying to clean out. There's more going on here. I mean, you have to think out of this box, you know, with the skin on it. You got to start thinking from His perspective instead of from yours. We feel like owed something. If we think we've earned something, it's going to eliminate God's pleasure. You realize that, don't you? I mean, do you think, honestly, that the people that get paid for doing a job, if they think they earned that and really are worth more, do you think there's any gratitude in their heart? No. You know, it's kind of like, well, underpaid again. That's the way they feel. What if they got paid and they just feel like, yeah, I'm getting paid the right amount? Is there any gratitude there? No. Where's the pleasure in paying somebody that did something? We're equal. Where is it? God didn't make you for a place to just get rid of stuff. Give them something to do. He made you for His pleasure. Now, you give somebody something and they don't feel like they've earned it. Something else starts happening, doesn't it? Things begin to change. Your attention changes from you to Him. Anyway, why would God ever give rewards? He doesn't want to be indebted to you. Why does He give them? Just for pleasure. Look at 4:11 again, Revelation. Thou art worthy, O Lord, receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created. Why do you think He made the rewards? Why do you think He made you to get them? Why do you think He made the opportunity and then worked in you so you could get them? For His pleasure. He gets something out of this, and He's the one that benefits. Oh, I benefit too. Yeah, but you see, the difference is, He doesn't owe you nothing. He really doesn't. Rewards are gifts. You say, well, how do you figure that? They're not spelled the same. Well, the rewards are gifts because this whole thing works like an Easter egg hunt. You take a bunch of kids out there, you go hide a bunch of eggs, and you have them start looking, right? Guess who gets the biggest reward? The ones that diligently seek. You think they earned anything that you put out there? No, they didn't. That's exactly what God's got going on. This thing isn't a matter of just starting out by coming to God. This thing's a matter of seeking His pleasure, seeking what's in it for Him, trying to understand it and then respond in the right way. Like what? Like a little kid that go out there and just knock themselves out looking for Easter eggs versus the kid that would go out there and knock themselves out looking for Easter eggs knowing the reason you hit them was so that you could enjoy the hunt. You see the difference? We go to this book, we come to church, you know, we're just doing an obligation. Stuff like that, man, it's so self-serving. God says, I enjoy the hunt. I want to see you guys look. Why, God? Because then it really is worth something to me and you both when I show it to you. You're getting warmer. Holy Spirit says, you're really getting hot now. Oh, you're getting cold. Why do we do that stuff? Where do you think you got it from? We got it from God. He's the one that does that stuff in our lives. Once again, observers are users. They seek the reward. They look for what's in it for them. You know why God doesn't show us more than He shows us in His book? Because we're like the little kid out there. All we want to do is fill our basket. And then we want to brag on all the stuff that we found. You know why some of the other kids get more than we get? Because they're little kids and they're humble. and God leads them to it. Look up, Sally. What's that by your feet, Sally? I'm looking. I don't see anything yet, but I'm looking. How about over there behind that rock? You want to know why God's not helping you find stuff about Him and for His pleasure? Because you're just seeking for what's in it for you. Now, that's sad. You know my problem? I got that same problem. What do you do about it? Well, you begin to start realizing why God did it. You start thinking about it in terms of faith. You start thinking about it in terms of, what's in it for you, God? How do you benefit? Man, this disaster just happened in my life. How do you benefit from that? I benefit when you respond the right way. Well, how do you want me to respond? I want you to be long-suffering. I want you to be patient. I want you to suffer long and be kind. How come? Because those things I receive with pleasure. Because why? Because you're trusting me. You realize it's me that worketh in you. And when you understand it's me that's working in you, then it's a whole lot easier to get through life, and then life and the problems have purpose. Let's close in prayer.